Charles Herman, philosopher and senior research fellow at the American Institute for Philosophical and Cultural Thought, joins the Plutopia podcast this time. We explore his study of the core precepts of honor and dignity.
Honor and dignity are not easy to define, but most people have an idea of what honor and dignity are, and generally speaking, that idea is going to be fairly good. But let me try something on you that is not that well known. In my work, I consider that dignity is the back of honor, and honor is the face of dignity. So if you lose a little bit of honor by doing a faux pas, dignity, people recognize you as having a fair amount of dignity, that dignity will keep you afloat. And if you have honor and you express that honor in doing a good job for the community, then that's not only honor, but it also heightens your dignity. So honor is a reflection of dignity, and dignity has honor's back.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm John Lebkoski, and my co-host and partner, Scoop Sweeney, has joined us today. And every day, pretty much. And our guest today is Charles Herman. And Charles he's a very interesting philosopher, an independent scholar, a senior research fellow at the American Institute for Philosophical and Cultural Thought. And I think his interests are pretty interesting. Formal ontology, axiology, philosophy of history, law, culture, logic, philosophy of mathematics, even. I can barely put two and two together. And it makes me, I actually wonder about, what is the philosophy of mathematics?
In my case, it was number theory.
Cool. Well, the more recent conversations you've been having are about, I guess you would say, they're more like cultural, and talking specifically about the conceptual binary between honor-based and dignity-based cultures. So can you say a little bit about that? What is the distinction, and how did you sort of come to that distinction and start focusing on it and thinking about it?
Well, let me introduce a couple of tidbits to get out of the way. Honor and dignity together constitute what we call a dichotomy. When it is used to distinguish cultural types, the anthropologists call it a typology. So the honor dignity theory is actually a typology in anthropological terms. Now, philosophy tends to look on these things as binaries. So I will be using three different terms to refer to these things in different contexts. The general term that I'm going to use is dichotomy, however. And let me try to get a heads up on this topic by trying some definitions. Honor and dignity are not easy to define, but most people have an idea of what honor and dignity are, and generally speaking, that idea is going to be fairly good. But let me try something on you that is not that well known. In my work, I consider that dignity is the back of honor, and honor is the face of dignity. So if you lose a little bit of honor by doing a faux pas, dignity, people recognize you as having a fair amount of dignity, that dignity will keep you afloat. And if you have honor and you express that honor in doing a good job for the community, then that's not only honor, but it also heightens your dignity. So honor is a reflection of dignity, and dignity has honors back. That's how I like to look at them. And I think that's valid for archaic cultures as well as modern cultures. I got a hold of this idea when I was studying in college back 50 years ago. I was studying some Friedrich Nietzsche, who had a dichotomy of his own, the Apollinean and Dionysian typology. And what I gathered from his work was that you weren't generally speaking, at least in his first book, The Birth of Tragedy, he didn't consider that everybody is a combination of Apollinean and Dionysian. He basically said you're Dionysian or you're Apollinean. And he thought that the Dionysian was real good and the Apollinean wasn't so good. So he had Wagner on a pedestal as being the leading Dionysian of the period. And I thought that people should be considered to have both Dionysian and Apollinean traits. But if the Dionysian traits outweighed the Apollinean traits, then you could call them Dionysian. If the Apollinean traits outweighed the Dionysian, then you could call them Apollinean. And that's how I've done the honor dignity. Everybody has honor and dignity-based traits. If your dignity-based traits outstrip the honor-based traits, then you're a dignity-based person. If it's reversed, then you're an honor-based person. So it was partly to correct Nietzsche, and partly because I was interested in honor and dignity, that I decided to do some work on this. And I worked on it for 50 years. Most of the work was done in the first 30 years. But in 2017, I wrote an article called The Classification of Honor-Based Cultures. And in 2019, a gal named Marjorie Balzer, who was the editor of the journal Archaeology and Anthropology of Eurasia, I think that's actually Anthropology and Archaeology of Eurasia, cited my article in her journal. So that put a feather in my cap and indicated that the way in which I was defining the culture, defining the honor-based cultures, was satisfactory for her work. And I was happy to hear that. So to get to the point of honor-based and dignity-based cultures, for the purpose of this session, I'm going to concentrate on the honor-based, because the honor-based are 90% of the world. The dignity-based are basically just in the countries spawned off from English colonies and Western Europe and England. So that's about 10% of the world's population. But of course, that's the power place until recently China came to the fore. We had all the had the by far the best amount of power in the world. Now we have some problems that are related to culture, to cultural factors. Honor and dignity are, as I will try to explain, the actual sources of both international problems and national problems. The the dignity based specializes in the rights of man. And some of those rights are not enjoyed by some of the honor-based cultures. For example, abortion and I'm having a brain fart right now.
It happens.
Women's rights and things of that nature.
Civil rights?
Women's rights.
Okay.
To their bodies.
But do civil rights fall under dignity-based culture?
Yes, it does. Yes, they do.
Yeah, okay.
As a matter of fact, your considered a dignity-based society in my system if you have a constitution and documents related to it that consists of civil rights, due process, and so forth. And if you take that seriously, then you're a dignity-based culture. So the honor-based cultures do not like some of these dignity-based rights, and that's caused some fractions, both within the church area. I'm aware that the Lutheran church is having quite a heyday trying to decide between whether to have gay rights or not. Same with the Methodist. So that's another area where you have the classification distinction causing problems. But Russia and Ukraine are basically an honor dignity based problem. The Ukrainians want integrity of their land, which is a dignity based proposition. And the Russians have a cultural relationship to it, which is an honor based tradition. So, and in the United States, we have a conflict between honor and dignity in our conservative liberal distinction. The liberals are dignity based and the conservatives are honor based. So I'm going to do a rundown of some of the important traits that characterize the honor based and the opposite traits. The opposite to those traits are the dignity based traits. And I'll give you some examples to let you get a better hold of the traits.
Okay.
So I'll start by saying that there are 15 traits that pretty well identify an honor-based culture, whether it's archaic or modern. And within that, there are 10 or so core traits. And if you have 6 or 7 to 10 of those core traits, you can consider yourself honor-based. That's the same system that the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM, treats the classification of those disorders. It has a core group of symptoms, and if you match 2 or 3 or 4 of those symptoms, then you're probably going to have that particular syndrome or disease. With the exception of a differential diagnosis, which makes the final decision.
Okay.
Now, one last note before I go to the traits. The honor-based cultures have 3 particular concepts that they take with special interest. They're especially concerned with respect, trust, and earned worth. That'll be the basis of these traits. All these traits will have something to do with respect, trust, and earned worth when they have to do with the honor-based system. The dignity-based system also has 3 concepts that they pay special attention to, and those are acceptance, faith, and inherent worth. These traits are associated, broadly speaking, with autonomy, individualism, and optimism. So now that we have all the introductory stuff out of the way, I'll go to the traits. The first trait is probably the most obvious one for modern cultures. It's an elevated interest in self-identity and cultural identity. And I want to say something else about dignity before I go. Dignity, there's two types of dignity. One of them is pragmatic, which is the dignity of everyday life. And then there's an ideal dignity, which is the ideal dignity that gives us our, out of which we get our concept of rights. So if you see an Indian chief acting staid and concerned and interested in the goings on of his people from a distance, that's an expression of his dignity. If a modern starts talking about human rights and civil rights, they're talking about pragmatic dignity. Pragmatic dignity, I'll give you an example of that. In the abortion controversy, By the way, is that air conditioner getting in the way of our podcast here? Okay. In the abortion contest, women want to have control of their bodies. That's the basic right associated with it. And the conservatives think that life itself should have dignity attached to it, which is also correct. So dignity attaches to both of those points of view. So what is pragmatic dignity? Pragmatic dignity is basically to allow both of those points of view to have their dignity. And so you have a right to your body and you have a right to life. You have both of those. That pretty well reduces to a right to abortion, but where abortion is distinctly limited. Depending on where you live in the country, it would be limited in various ways. That's a pragmatic use of dignity. And I think that's how the abortion issue is going to ultimately be settled. So,
you know, an interesting point about abortion is that from the conservative perspective, there's this really dramatic concern about the life of an unborn baby and an insistence that that baby should be allowed to live, you know, to be born.
Right.
But there's less concern with the life of that child after it's been born. There's little concern, you know, for instance, if the child is born but then starves to death, that's fine. The concern was with the life of the child in the womb and past the womb. Beyond that, who cares?
Well, I think the conservatives would disagree with you on that. They would say that they value the child. In fact, the worst kind of abortion is abortion just after birth. Now, some honor-based cultures, not very many, but some honor-based cultures actually practice infanticide. If the baby didn't look well, or if something else was amiss, or in the case of some cultures, just if it was female, for example, it wasn't as good as a male, and female babies were sometimes terminated shortly after birth. But conservatives today generally are very concerned about human life in general, and especially about infant life and uterine life and children's lives. That's my experience in dealing with them. I lived in a rural Republican area for about 3 years during some period of my life, and that's what I've gotten out of those 3 years of living with them.
The point I was making kind of comes from an acknowledgement that, for instance, I mean, recently there legislation was passed, or there was a decision to do away with food and nutrition programs to ensure that children are well fed and healthy. And throughout life, there are points like once a child has grown to become an adult, if that adult crosses a line, then there could be like a death penalty.
Right.
And seems that if you had such a, I mean, it's, you know, if you consider life to be sort of sacrosanct.
Yeah, it's inconsistent.
Yeah, yeah.
About that, I totally agree. Very inconsistent. And that bill is now going to the House. And I hope it dies there.
Yeah, that bill, in fact, cuts out about 17 million people from Medicaid, which is a last effort for, you know, people to get some sort of health insurance. And a lot of those people are children.
And I am included in that batch, so I'm especially concerned about this.
I didn't mean to distract from your...
No, that's okay.
You were on a roll.
Sure. So we're dealing with self-identity and cultural identity. When it comes to pragmatic dignity, in many honor-based societies, you'll notice that the people are a little touchy. You can say something that they take as a slight where you didn't intend it that way. And Orrick Kimmerer, who's a major worker in this area from Israel considers that honor-based societies are somewhat quarrelsome. And that would be true for, say, the Middle Eastern group of honor-based cultures, but it's not so much a matter of it's not so much a problem in Eastern Europe, which is also honor-based, or in other honor-based areas. And there are some archaic societies that are quarrelsome and some that are not quarrelsome. So, but you'll notice quarrelsomeness in many of them. So I put that in the item here. And cultural identity is also very important to them, as we've seen in recent fights over immigration. The second trait is known to us from the Southern hospitality. Virtually all honor-based cultures are known for their hospitality. The host takes very good care of the visitor, the guest. In the dignity-based countries, that shows up as potluck, block parties, and so forth, which there aren't really that much of, but the hospitality that the dignity-based people shows up in those forms. There's a kind of an old saw about visiting honor-based cultures that are archaic in the modern age. A couple things that visitors are reminded to keep in mind, and that is don't take a picture without getting permission, and make sure that you play with the children. So a third trait is realism. Honor-based countries and groups are basically more realistic than dignity-based, and dignity-based are more idealistic. In realism, you have instrumentalism, which is basically getting something out of it, what's in it for me kind of thing. And then you have Machiavellian and realpolitik at the general level. You'll notice that when honor-based countries go to war, they don't pay much attention to the Geneva Convention. A fourth trait has to do with the honor-based reaction to contempt. They have a very, very solid and firm reaction to being held in contempt. When I had a blog about 20 years ago, back in 2000 roughly, Ariel Sharon walked over the Temple Mount, and the Palestinians went crazy. Well, that very day, I predicted the second Intifada. The reason why I can predict that is because I know how honor-based countries respond to contemptuous feelings. Then about 30 years ago, I was walking into a Denny's restaurant and took the last seat available at the counter. And to my left was a taciturn young man. And you couldn't help but notice that he had one fingernail that was an inch long. It was on his right pinky. And I thought to myself, an inch long fingernail on the right pinky, how in the world does he keep it from breaking? And I thought that guy must have something really, really on his mind to go to the effort of keeping that pinky. So knowing my Middle East history a little bit and the culture of that area, I got a little ballsy and just outright asked him, would you get rid of your pinky if Israel was shoved into the Mediterranean? And he responded with a gasp and said, how could you know? And I said, well, I understand what you're going through. So contempt is the fourth trait. Fifth trait is that the honor-based people tend to be charming, generous, magnanimous, and spontaneous and free-spirited. And the dignity-based could use a little lesson in that regard. I remember going with my parents to the Montreal World's Fair in 1968. we went to a hotel in an impoverished area, and outside there were a bunch of people singing Henry VIII song of Herman's Hermits at the top of their lungs, and I thought that was charming. My parents weren't so charmed; they wanted to get to sleep. But that's the kind of thing that you find at an Irish pub, and they're generally speaking honor based. Well, that's an honor based leftover, but that is very good to have. They're really, in terms of my system, they're actually not nominally dignity based, but it's very good that they carry on that honor based tradition. A sixth trait has to do with children. The honor based people love their kids. That's not to say that the dignity-based don't love kids, but the honor-based make a special show of it. I was listening to 95.5 FM. The announcer was saying that she had talked with a couple of women just prior to Mother's Day, and she asked them, what would you like as a present for Mother's Day? And one of the mothers said, a nap. And I thought that was interesting and appropriate. But the other one said, I want to play with my babies. I want to play with my kids. That's the honor-based approach. And like I said, you go to visit them, you're expected to play with their kids. Another example of knowing how they treat their kids comes into play when I was restaurant general. What's the word? General manager of a restaurant, an Italian restaurant. This was in the early afternoon when it was dead. I had only two tables. One was a table of two Germans, a husband and wife, talking about some things kind of intently. And then I had another table with a guy of what looked to be Pacific Island descent. He was built like a brick shit house. And he had three kids with him. The wife wasn't present. I noticed he was driving a Porsche. So I thought to myself, this could be interesting, because he was letting the kids run roughshod throughout the restaurant. And I thought to myself, you know, this couple is probably German. From what I could gather from their accent. And Germany is very definitely dignity-based. So I was thinking, you know, there might be a little friction between these two places. And sure enough, the dignity-based couple, the man staying where he was, shouted over to the other man who had the three kids and said, please control your kids. And that was that. The guy with the kids sauntered over, got next to the table, and smacked the gentleman in the face, and hard enough that it backed him, and he hit his head on the floor. He went backwards and hit his head on the floor. And so I went up to him and asked him if he was all right. Got the chair up, and he said he was okay, not to worry, don't bother calling the police or the ambulance, I'll be fine. If something happens, I'll let you know. So I said, well, all right. And I didn't say anything to the other fellow because he just sauntered back to his place. And fortunately, the food came up for that table. So they were going to behave themselves because they were going to be eating. And that was that. That was the end of the kerfuffle. But that tells you something about honor-based people and their kids. You don't interrupt them by telling them how to raise their kids. You don't get them riled by interfering with their kids. So the seventh trait has to do with moralism and ethicism. Honor-based countries tend to be more moralistic. There's definitely a controversy between what constitutes morality and what constitutes ethics. A lot of people consider that those are synonymous. The philosophy people tend to think that ethics is a meta-moralistic feature, that it goes over the moral features and says what morality is in general, rather than dealing with specific moral objectives. Ronald Dworkin, the famous legal scholar, says that ethicist behavior is behavior that meets conditions of the good life, whereas Thomas Scanlon, a philosopher, says that what morality is giving what we owe to each other. So the moralistic is a feature of the honor-based people. I was listening to a podcast between Ross Douthat and Jonathan Kipperman. Kipperman was talking about a splinter group of the right, and he was saying that they were too moralistic, they were too traditional, and they were too this and that. So we'll talk about tradition. That's one of the other ones, traits. But he mentioned moralistic. Then I looked up Wikipedia article, and they mentioned religious moralism under the conservative realm. So that's another trait to look out for.
And I have a question about that, though. What?
Sure.
So how would we see now that there are some people who present as conservatives and might, based on the face value of their comments, be considered dedicated to an honor-based cultural approach, but who are in fact extremely immoral and to some extent hide their immorality. So where do they fall exactly?
Well, that's a character defect, whereas I'm giving qualities that help define a general principle of people.
Okay, understood.
Yeah, I share your opinion on that. So an eighth tendency is a tendency towards authoritarianism. Now, all honor-based cultures got their start having to work against a very difficult situation called an environment. It's not easy to start with nothing and start a society. So the basic rule of thumb is that the people get together and they come up with very firm rules, which nobody should disobey under penalty of being kicked out of the community, for example. The penalties are pretty stiff, and that's because what's at stake is the life of the community. Now, cultures change very little. In the traditional terms, Great Britain says that a tradition pertains to a value that has been in place for over 500 years. That's how slow traditions change. So the authoritarianism is a leftover from that beginning. But people also in an honor-based society seem to think that they're not capable of coming up with solutions without having brawls and fights. And so they don't mind an authoritarian keeping them straight. So between the carryover effect and that effect, you tend to see authoritarianism in honor-based cultures. Not all of them. There are some archaic cultures that are very peace-loving and that have democratic rule. But for most of the honor-based societies, authoritarianism is a marked tendency. Ninth trait is that religion is more important for the honor-based than it is for the dignity-based. Not that some dignity-based people don't like religion and aren't very much involved in it, but the fact is they're less involved in it than the conservatives are, than the honor-based are. So they will oppose abortion, oppose euthanasia, oppose LGBT rights and so forth. And the last one is tradition. And that's a pretty obvious one. It's also a very big one. You don't find dignity-based cultures that are very traditional. But honor-based cultures are traditional. They don't like things changing at a fast pace. They quite often dislike technology. They just sometimes even dislike laws, a certain segment of them. So those are 10. If you add five or more of those traits, you'd be likely to be a show-in for honor-based individual. And if the vast majority of your fellow mankind were of the same, then your culture would be honor-based. Now, I've got a couple of things I can say about the system itself, the methodology, because it's dichotomies and typologies have been under fire by academicians as being not a way to classify. So despite having been written up in a very favorable way by an anthropologist on classification systems, nonetheless, they don't like the system of honor and dignity any better than they liked the system of shame and guilt that Ruth Benedict and Margaret Mead put forward in the early 19th century, early 1900s, rather. One of the anthropologists of that day said that if Margaret Mead had not been a quote-unquote member of the faith, that this binary system would have been quote-unquote almost undiluted bunkum. Another anthropologist by the name of Herbert Lewis said that typologies are static and cannot yield insights into processes or developmental schemas. Vincent Ostrom, husband of Eleanor Ostrom, the winner of the 2009 Nobel Prize in Economics, won the Nobel because she was able to demonstrate that what I call honor-based cultures were able to avoid the tragedy of the commons. That is to say, they were able to prevent people from taking advantage of common resources, and they would take only their share, and avoid what came to be called the tragedy of the commons by Garrett Hardin in a famous 1968 article. But there have been some people who sensibly used this system. One of them was Max Weber, the famous sociologist. He said that typological concepts are in existence in sociology to obtain uniformities in empirical processes. And in philosophy, Alfred North Whitehead asserted that abstractive concepts such as honor and dignity, such as what we would call honor and dignity, are quote unquote weapons to control the thought of concrete fact. So the last one I'll mention is that David Cairns, a classicist, said that what mattered to Homer's heroes reflects what still matters to us today. And he was referring to the honor, the shame-guilt binary that was popular when he was writing. So that's the last I had from my notes.
Well, you know, we're looking at conflict between a couple of what appear to be honor-based societies in the Mideast. Israel and Iran seem to be very honor-based, but I don't see how that would they would ever be able to be reconciled in any way. Do you see that being something that can be solved?
Well, Israel is nominally actually a dignity-based society because they have established rights, and they pay attention to them, except for when it comes to Iran. They make an exception. So they're nominally dignity-based, but they act very honor-based. And I will say another thing about honor-based societies, they tend to war with one another. It is very rare for a dignity-based society to go to war with another dignity-based society. In fact, I'm not sure that it's ever happened. So there, of course, you had World War One, but those were mainly honor-based societies at the time. It's only been since World War II that Germany has been a dignity-based society. After World War II, they put up a constitution where in the second sentence they have the words, dignity is inviolable. And they have added dignity into their concept of law, as has France. The United States hasn't done that. So the relationship of honor-based societies holds. They tend to have war with one another, and dignity-based societies don't. So Israel violates the dignity-based principles that they have sworn to, and that's a point against them to start with. But the second point against them is that they held the Palestinians in basic I keep forgetting this word. What's the condition
contempt?
I think it begins with A. Jimmy Carter, of course, was a religionist, and he wrote two books in which he said that Israeli treatment of Palestinians was apartheid. That's the word I said.
That's it, apartheid. Okay, apartheid. Yeah.
And for Carter, a Christian, to say that is saying something, because Christians are normally automatically in favor of Israel just because of the Christian landmarks over there. So Israel has some explaining to do on two different fronts.
Go ahead.
What do you make of the people currently pushing for this country to become a theocracy?
Of this country, the United States? Yeah, that's a group. Millenarians are of that opinion, and so is another group. There's no question that some conservatives, and certainly a portion of the Christian right, would like the society to be entirely Christian. And there's also no doubt that since 1960 or so, they've made a very forthright attempt to get conservatives onto the Supreme Court so they could change by law, but they couldn't change otherwise. And this idea of taking their religious principles and forcing it upon everybody else is, first of all, a violation of the church-state separation doctrine. And it's a woeful miscarriage of that doctrine. That's the greatest thing I have against the conservative culture. Actually, when I lived amongst them, I thought their culture was basically very charming, with that exception. It is simply not in the fabric of the United States tradition to use religion and put it over everybody else. That's what they were doing in the colonial times, and that's what was responsible for freedom of religion. It was primarily freedom of conscience to say that I'm not of your religion, so don't press me into going to church. That kind of freedom of conscience is exactly what's being stolen when we have abortion control and when the laws that uphold gay rights are under siege, and other rights as well.
Well, that brings me to what I was going to ask, which is how can your analysis help us to get our heads around what's happening now and maybe think through some solutions? Because it appears to me that some set of people who define themselves as conservatives, whether they are or not, may be debatable, but they're sort of brute forcing their way into complete control of a complete authoritarian regime. with a game show host at the at the at the as the authority.
I couldn't
But
imagine.
I just wonder what can we do, you know?
Well, there's a couple of things we can do, and I'm glad you asked the question. I like to get the basics out of the way so that I can hope that my audience agrees with me that there is such a thing as an honor-based society and such a thing as a dignity-based society, and that there's a rift between them. One thing that doctors learn sometimes the hard way is that when they make a mistake and kill a family member by mistake, by say, I'm remembering the guy who invented the heart-lung machine. He made a mistake and cut the right atrium of a heart of a child who was under surgery, and his parents were in the looking viewer the viewer room, and this guy I forget his name. He could have just put his thumb over the leak and had somebody else stitch it while he was holding his thumb, but he didn't. He froze, and he was so well known and so powerful that the other doctor on the surgery didn't feel like he could interfere, so the guy bled to death on the table, and he was very contrite, apologized profusely, and he stopped doing surgeries from that day forward. And the people did not take him to court. And it has now been demonstrated by every study that's been done that it's very rare for a family to take a physician to court if he apologizes for his error. Now, that has a parallel in cultural mechanics. If you demonstrate that you respect another people's culture when you're talking to a person of that culture, they're not likely to have an argument with you. And when you even go to the effect of letting them know that you have taken over a couple of their traits as being helpful to your own life, they're not likely to be at war with you. I didn't have any trouble with anybody that I had as Republican friends in that community in southern Oklahoma when I was there. And that's because I showed respect for their culture. And I think that every dignity-based person who's worthy of the name allows any culture to have its dignity. And that means that you basically let them have their way with certain exceptions. And I think everybody knows what some of those exceptions would be. But generally speaking, people don't go for those exceptions very often. It's Republicans don't go around killing people as a rule. So in general, in living in that culture, there's relatively little crime, and they're just very, very charming people. I have a little anecdote about that. In fact, I was doing some traveling in Texas, going from Alice, Texas, back to one of the cities on the Gulf. I forget, it's not Houston, but it's one south of it.
Galveston?
Just north of Galveston, I think.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't know why I can't remember it, but I was driving an older Oldsmobile Coronado, and the ball joints were going out slowly but surely. And when I got to a countryside Walmart that was built out in the country, expecting that the city would build out toward it, it had a full garage and all the trappings. I went into that lot, and as I was just moseying along in that lot, my front left tire came off the car. The entire tire came off the car and rolled down into a ditch. So I was in pretty serious straits there. I didn't have a credit card with me, and I didn't have enough cash to pay for what would have been a fairly expensive repair. So I went over to the the ridge and the ditch, and just looked down at it, wondering what I was going to do. And I heard a voice behind me saying, "Say, sir, sir." And I looked around and said, "Yes." He said, "Looks like you've got a problem there." And I said, "Yes, I certainly do." And he said, "I want to show you that car up on the lift. That's a Cadillac of some sort." And he said, "That the parts on that car are completely interconvertible with the parts on your car. So I'll tell you what, I would like to buy your car for $100 and give you a ride to wherever you need to go." And I said, "Well, that sounds good to me. That's a bargain." And $100 was a fair amount of money 35 years ago, which was when that was. So he had to go by his house at the time, and I had laundry in the back of the car. And when we got to the house, they insisted on doing my laundry for me and set me down to a feast. And then we went and he drove me down to I still can't remember it, my place on the lake, on the bay. So these people were Christian evangelicals. And that was the kind of culture that I found when I was living in southern Oklahoma. It wasn't to that extent, but it was on that line.
If you had been black and not white, do you think you would have had the same treatment?
Very possibly from that particular couple.
Good.
Well, John and I grew up in the same town in West Texas. It was that kind of place. I would have expected that kind of behavior from people we grew up with. West Texas is very, it always has been very conservative, but it's very, people expect you to have good upbringing, good morals, and some people didn't, but most people kind of exhibited that. And if they saw that you needed help, it wasn't unusual for me to get help when I had some sort of a breakdown or problem, because I had a lot of bad cars when I was a kid.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah.
Yeah, back then I don't think we had any conservatives or liberals or anything like that, as far as I was concerned, at least.
Back then we had Dixiecrats, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, everybody was a Democrat in Texas at the time. So you could pretty much rely on the fact that politically anybody around was going to be a Democrat. There were a few Republicans, I guess. And now it's sort of reversed. And I'm sure that if you went to our little hometown, you would find that most of the people there are Republicans.
Yeah, most probably.
But that is, to me, sort of the problem, that we have become so attached to these ideologies, and people are thinking of themselves in this partisan sense, as I'm in this party or that party, and I carry this belief or that belief. And they've lost the sort of inherent flexibility that a human can potentially have.
Of course, dignity-based people have an ideology that goes toward dignity, but the advice that I would give to any dignity-based person is to treat conservatives with regard. And you can talk about them all you want behind their back, and mention how ridiculous they are for voting for somebody like Trump, but when dealing with them in person, it's to everybody's benefit to give them the benefit of the doubt and treat them with regard.
Yeah, I mean, I have this. I said there were no, as far as I was concerned, there were no conservatives or liberals or whatever back then. I mean, I'm just kind of, I guess I'm that way. So I live in a neighborhood where we have people who actually were flying Trump flags and I mean, it's a mixed neighborhood. Some of the people feel that they lean to the right, and some feel that they lean to the left. But there were definitely these people who were making a show of the fact that they were committed to the right and committed to Trump. But I don't treat them any differently from any of my other neighbors.
Right.
And I don't really.
The same way. I've never seen a dignity-based person treat a conservative badly. They can come to very argumentative blows, like William F. Buckley and the writer
Gore Vidal.
Gore Vidal, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a show and a half.
Yeah, you need a lot of popcorn for that one, right?
Yeah.
I kind of miss those guys. I mean, I'd love to have a William Buckley around right now.
Yeah, and Gore Vidal wasn't much of a slacker either. He was good. He gave as good as he got from those exchanges.
Well, I think that people can get together and live together amicably, but I think they have to understand one another first. And I think understanding one another culturally in terms of honor and dignity is a real good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel that we have, to some extent, been manipulated into taking positions, to some extent, extreme positions, and making identifications and having our heads sort of filled with ideological assumptions and thoughts.
Social sites on the internet are a very convenient way to explain a lot of that, as you have anonymity on the internet, and you're more likely to express your heartfelt opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be polite.
And the thing is that we're not our opinions. You know, I mean, I may have opinions, but I'm not my opinions. And I shouldn't live or die by my opinions.
Yeah.
That's my opinion anyway.
That's a good opinion. I share the opinion.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Do you want to kind of summarize the discussion?
Sure. There exist honor-based and dignity-based societies. Dignity-based societies are known principally for the fact that they have constitutional documents that provide for civil rights and due process. They don't always act it, admittedly, and Israel certainly doesn't. But by and large, countries that are nominally dignity-based follow along with the traits that I've provided for them or observed in them and written down and written about for the last 50 years. And those traits follow along with the three major ones. Faith, acceptance, and inherent dignity. All of the traits of dignity will fall back on those, and all the traits of honor base will fall back on trust, respect, and earned merit. So you've heard 14 traits that if you see somebody with five or more of them, you might consider the idea that you're looking at a cultural effect. And a dignity-based principle is to treat that culture with respect. Of course, if you're already honor-based, you're probably going to treat them with respect anyway. And that honor-based person should know that if they come across the opposite traits, then they're talking to a dignity-based person, and they should be mindful that it's a cultural trait and that it should be respected. And if everybody does that, there's not going to likely be any war.
So we, I would assume from our discussion that we consider American culture, the culture of the USA, to be a dignity-based culture.
Nominally.
Can it change to an honor-based culture?
It's possible if you start disobeying the courts and disobeying due process and disobeying civil rights. It can start to trend in that direction and become a neoliberal democracy first, and then with full autocracy it becomes an honor-based.
That is my concern.
And that's my concern also.
Well, let's hope we can have the good outcomes and not the the bad ones.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Charles. This has been a fascinating discussion.
Thanks for having me.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.